Hi, everybody. That's Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango. Thank you for coming, James.
Small. No, oh my God, no, I said Small. Rose.
I get James's smiling a lot. Like, my poor boyfriend on the street the other day, we're like running to dance class, and he's like, someone stops me because they know me, and he was like, can you stop running into people you know from the internet? So we're gonna pretend
I literally like almost said James is smiling.
Thank you so much.
But I mean, James is smiling. James
we should,
Rose.
We should keep that.
I think you should James keep Rose. It. Oh, yeah.
So, at James is smiling. How are you? Thank you for coming.
Oh, my God. James is smiling. James is smiling. Hi. Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Fun little short notice thing. Y'all, like an hour ago, I was not en route to this podcast recording.
Well, so James was at an IRL tango event last week. It was already last week. Last week our salon series, yeah. Where James got to get a little taste of who Tango is, how we have conversations, what we're all about in an in-person setting, which is, I think, really rare for most people. Like, it's a lot easier to digest our information through this podcast, for instance.
Yeah.
And then we immediately knew that we wanted you on our podcast.
Cornered.
Thank you so much, because I was walking up to you as you were walking up to me, and I was going to be like, I'm hosting a salon, and I'm going to be on your podcast.
Yes.
I would like you to know this information. And then before I could say the words,
it's like, the opposite of you.
Come on our podcast.
Yeah. You know, when like someone is like, you're fired, I quit, at the same time.
Literally
that. It was like, you're hired, I say yes.
It was a beautiful.
I agree.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful moment of consent.
Enthusiastic.
Verbal consent.
Would you like to? Yes, I'd like to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are the best.
Yes. It was a yes and moment. You could say, and
ooh,
the theater.
Yeah, the
yes,
theater.
And
let's
do you
talk
think
about the theater.
The sure. Theater kids. Hi, everybody. We're all queer theater kids. Welcome to our
this
show.
This is a true
theater made me gay.
Buckle
the theater
and
made me gay. Welcome to
that's
our
a whole
actually
lot of
that's
podcast.
So true.
Theater made me gay.
Shout out to the National Tour of the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Literally, he knows. He knows.
Honestly, that made a lot of people gay, probably.
Oh,
probably.
But like literally he was like my first kiss and like my first almost everything and like was gentle and kind. And
oh
I was
God.
Like, I don't know who I am because I was a senior in high school and they like did
where
a
were
workshop.
You?
I was in Florida. I went to an arts high school in Tampa, Florida. Shout out to Blake High School.
I know Blake High School.
The home of the Yellow Jackets.
I know Blake High School.
How do you know Blake High School?
I went to high school in Orlando, Florida.
Where?
Lake Highland.
Duh. Thespian
Duh.
Festival.
Oh, I wasn't a thespian. I thought I was too good for it, which I was.
This tracks knowing you.
Tracks,
which I was.
Which I was. I'm like a 30 plus time nationally ranked speech and debate champion.
Stunning.
Yes. Yeah,
it
so
makes a lot of sense.
It makes,
this makes
a lot
of sense. I feel like I could learn from you. I love to debate, but also just mostly in high school, that was to make me feel good about my own knowledge, not really for the purpose of debating.
Sure.
It stemmed from insecurity.
I was more public speaking, not debating. So I would give like 10-minute speeches.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and
I do that too on Instagram.
Yeah, it honestly totally tracks because I went to college and I was studying performing arts. And every director was like, have you ever thought about being a politician? Like over and over again, like I'd give monologues and like I'd audition and I'd always get cast, but never in like the right roles.
Okay.
And part of that was because of very, very sexist casting, very gender-based casting.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was in a production and all of the women were waitresses and all of the men were chefs in this production of The Kitchen. Granted, it was like an old-fashioned play written.
Which we should no longer produce.
Doesn't make it less sexy.
Yeah, which just means that we don't make this work anymore.
Well,
today, in today's better world.
Yes,
you didn't grow up in today's better world.
No, and I auditioned for the owner of the restaurant.
And then you were made a waitress.
And then I was made a waitress. But anyways, wait, the theater, do you think that theater kids are better at talking about consent because of our improv training, our yes and mentality?
You know, I would I was gonna jump in for you. I would like to make that generalization. However, I don't think so. I think that it is, in like any community, it is just a microcosm of a very diverse group of people. And you can't put any kind of like, unless we know that everybody is starting from the same kind of like, we all get the same education, we all get the same like, this is wrong, this is good. No.
No.
You know, there's so many problems in theater, too, of, like, people, like, sexual assault and like casting couch and like things are getting better. Mm-hmm. We're making things better. We're actively all in the theater and like, you know, examples of...
Well, don't out me.
I agree with you. I was going to say the same answer. I do not think it actually makes us better at consent. My framing for this is in high school growing up, like with people who were learning who they are, and all of us look back on high school with this like fond and awkwardness and disdain, I think, simultaneously. And I am in that club of people where one of them, yeah, I'm in that group of thespians that's looks back and goes, oh, you need a hug. And I don't think it inherently makes us better at consent because we still have the power dynamics at play that are toxic. Yeah. You know, whether we want to or not, we have directors that abuse their power. We have choreographers that abuse their power. The fact that we have power systems in place.
Producers,
absolutely. Just, I'm even thinking on small scale high school when you're growing up learning about consent, middle school. So your developmental years, mm-hmm. I argue any year can be developmental, but I am 24. So the development of me thus far is limited in terms of my breadth of knowledge.
Oh, I'm developing every single day. I was saying on a podcast recently that I wake up every morning. I'm like, am I a virgin today? Am I not a virgin today? It's kind of up in the air.
Me, I wake up every day and my recent thing has been like, what gender expression is going to be best fit by the clothing I'm going to wear? Mm. And honestly, I don't fucking know half the time. Can I curse on this podcast?
Yes, you can.
So no, I don't think it makes it better. And just to illustrate this, the people that I have been sexually assaulted by or harassed by have all been theater people. Mm. It is not the people that were like the wealthy lawyers, businessmen, doctors, powerful men in New York that
but
I have
also... But if you know
also...
any of those...
Right.
You can find us at Tinker.
Point being, not that that's my experience that's personal, but like when I experienced sexual harassment in the workplace, it was not in my corporate jobs. Mm. It was as the dance captain.
Absolutely.
When I... Yeah.
Well, I think that boundaries are just drawn super differently, right? Like totally. Corporate culture obviously is set to keep people high up, to continue marginalizing and creating like systematic indifferences between people in the workplace,
but
right?
We
like
also
the
have weak systematic gap, oppression blah, 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 in theater, right?
Of course, but I think that the corporate structure, while flawed, obviously, and not totally. Serving everybody, is set to draw really clear boundaries, and it's your choice as a human with willpower and with self-control to either abide by those boundaries or not, but they are set in a way that in theater they are not set.
You're
constantly
correct.
Touching each other, you're constantly working with emotional material, talking with each other about personal experiences. It's not an environment that's like a work environment where you're actually focused on a deliverable product that is devoid of emotion, right?
I'm hoping that this new wave of intimacy coaches, like when we're thinking about, I read an article with Audra McDonald when she was doing Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune about the intimacy coach that they had. And I think that's the same person who did The Inheritance and a couple of other particularly intimate plays. And when you're involving things like stimulating sex on stage or anything that is going to be personal and requiring like physical acts that you may or may not be comfortable doing in front of an audience or with a new person. I think that those people have such promise and possibility to be change makers in this industry. And I am grateful that producers or whoever is advocating for actors, maybe it is other actors, I'm not in those rooms yet.
Actors Equity does a lot of advocating.
I'm not in the union, so that's not something I'm privy to. I do a lot of my own advocating for myself.
You know,
I'm hoping that changes the landscape.
Let's go into a little bit of your own advocating for yourself. Mm. So we're all theater people. It's so easy for us to just jump into like, this is what the theater is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For so everyone out there, James is an actor,
yes.
an instructor, a dancer, a writer, an Instagram personality.
A nutritionist.
The nutritionist is funny because I truly defer all that to my best friend. Her name's Katie Cordino. We run a podcast together about diet culture and eliminating that and how to fuel your body in a way that like nourishes your soul. Mm-hmm. And so even though I have like this online certificate that says I'm a nutritionist, I don't know shit. And like anybody who says they're a nutritionist, like just be very careful because yeah. like what mm-hmm. the schooling she went through to become a dietitian and like the rigor is beyond comprehension. It is the equivalent of like getting your, I mean, doing your medical residency is similar. Yeah. So yeah. that's like the disclaimer I want to make on that. Yeah. I talk a lot about food though, for sure.
Yeah.
Just because like being recovered from my own disordered eating has allowed mm-hmm. me freedom to talk about that in a way that like a lot of either masculine presenting, male identifying or non-binary people don't get to talk about as much.
Yeah. I think that something that's so beautiful about what you do is what you're saying as an advocate for yourself, like you are in a career and an art form that is very determined by other people typically, mm-hmm. as we just so easily launched nope. into in the theater. Mm-hmm. And you have a much different path with your artistry where it's serving you for a purpose and you take care and talk about and advocate for your body as a vessel for your art mm-hmm. and how you're taking care of your instrument.
Thank you so much. I have worked exceedingly hard at that, and it is mm-hmm. because I've experienced the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
what was the journey like getting to a place where you wanted to talk about things that are very private practices for a lot of people and making that a little bit more public?
When I was a sophomore in college, I went into one of like the big Broadway show auditions, and I was so excited because I was going to get seen. Mm-hmm. And the casting director, who I did not know this at the time, but looking back on this, I know now he's one of the most important people in the industry in terms of casting. And I sang my song. I did well. I was a sophomore in college. I was excited to be seen by this team. Sure. I truly did not think I was going to book the show. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, I did not. And I sang, and this casting director said to me, "Great, come back when you've gained 20 pounds. And I grabbed my book and I said, "That is an example of something you should never say to another actor." And I walked out. And isn't it interesting how I didn't book that job, but I did go home and look in the mirror and I just cried. I am a person who lives with a lot of thin privilege, and my body is well represented in pop culture and media. However, back then I was still grappling with my gender and identifying as a cis male. Now I am a non-binary person who uses they, them pronouns. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of maleness in my journey, so I may mm-hmm. mix up pronouns here and there depending on the timeline. Mm-hmm. Point being, when I was looking at myself in the mirror, I did not see my thin body represented by the Broadway boys in the ensembles dancing. And
which was the pinnacle of your media, totally, right? Like there are so many different totally. Forms of media, and if the media and the art that you're seeking out isn't representing you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so the world that I fit into, that I wanted to be a creator in, did not accept me overall. And mm-hmm. so I started going to the gym and trying to bulk up, and like essentially developed an eating disorder because I was so praised for being thin mm-hmm. by people, and how feminine that made me look, and how attractive and how fetishized that was mm-hmm. by the queer community, by other people, by my friends, by hello. We have a cat guest. How are you? Do you have something to add to this? Do you relate? Yeah, me too. Mm. So there was this tension where I was trying to find my masculinity in like the size of my biceps and maintain my femininity in like my waistline. Mm. And both of those were inherently so unhealthy that I was like eating one meal a day. And I was never diagnosed with an eating disorder. My best friend, Katie, who I mentioned earlier, was smart enough to notice what was happening because she had been through the same thing, and brought me to this group of people called Eat, Breathe, Thrive. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially like having a recovery support system, but it was like journaling and doing yoga about your relationship with your body. Mm-hmm. And through this very gentle yoga practice and like this gentle prodding of questions and like rubbing oil on my body, which is a practice called Abhyanga, which is self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. And you warm up the oil and you make it ritualistic. Ooh. And you like touch the parts of yourself that you are not comfortable with. And like, I remember getting to my arms and just having a breakdown. And I was like, this is not a breakdown. This is a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. I have been physically and metaphorically starving myself of what I deserve. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so then and there, I started working with like a health at every size dietitian at NYU to get myself back on track to fuel my body properly. Mm-hmm. So like all of this to say, like that was one comment that was more the straw that broke the camel's back, but it's a lifetime of being fetishized and demonized for what I look like. And if I, as a person with like the utmost thin privilege, am experiencing this, I know the scale must be even grander for other body types, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's something that's really important about you saying that, even though that this was just the straw that broke the camel's back, is that like, it reminds me actually of something that very like casually happened to me physically, which is that I threw my back out again. I have a bad back, and it's one of those things where it's just something that I live with always. So this is a metaphor for what you're talking about. But, you know, I went to the doctor and they reset it. And then I was like, oh, thank you so much. It was not a big deal. And they were like, no, it probably was building up for a while. And then it happened. You know, it's not something that happens randomly.
Totally. Yeah.
And so same thing where when it got to the point that you needed to seek help, it's because you hit the breaking moment. It before the moment of recognition. And unfortunately, that happens for a lot of us, myself relating to that. But we can also start to recognize the signs so that, and give ourselves the tools and the language so that we can get to that place where we seek groups out like the one that you went to before needing the break.
Totally.
Tools, language, so important. And honestly, the thing that has always made me so drawn to you since we met was your toolbox with words and the language. And it's like, I can't even begin to think about being like that amazing with like my words and then how I can like talk about my body and like my health and like my holistic wellness. And
yeah, it's a deep self-awareness.
It's a deep self-awareness. And it makes me think of like step one, how you got there. And for a lot of us, it's that good old birds and the bees talk, right? Yep. Like your puberty moment, your puberty talk is the beginning of toolbox for how to talk about your body.
Yeah.
What was your birds and the bees, your puberty talk, your first touch point?
My earliest memories are being in elementary school. It's funny how I have an immediate answer, right? Like that really struck something in me.
We all do.
I remember being on the elementary school playground, maybe second grade, and my best friends that were all women were like, you would be so beautiful if you were a girl. Like, you have the perfect body to be a girl.
And I was definitely like, got that as a kid too.
Did you? I can imagine that. I can see how people are like, archetype wise. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that caused, I think, a dysmorphia that just like, it was like a little nugget that lodged somewhere in my psyche that bloomed without making too much of an appearance, but like cast a shadow. Right? Yeah. It's like the tree that you don't notice until it gets in your way.
Yeah.
And like, I got whacked by a branch later on in college. You know what I mean? And like, it was bloody. And I picked myself up and like, honestly, I cut down the tree and I planted a new one. I really like this metaphor. Yeah. It's really working.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like, instead of this, like, you have to dig out, you have to excavate the language that does not serve you.
Yeah.
And a lot of my language that it has not served me is the majority of my lexicon about my body up until my junior year of college. So like, we're talking about like maybe 4 years worth of grappling with the identifiers that are most useful for me. And like, a lot of trial and error, and a lot of like, when we're at the salon, I'll share this. Haley Jacobson moderated. Haley is a wonderful person who has uplifted me and supported me in ways that I sometimes forget that I deserve. And she asked me to be there because she said, I think your voice is important. And like, just hearing those words, I think your voice is important, is, it just takes my breath away sometimes. Like, that is that's the utmost validation, right? And I'm a Leo, so like, I thrive on validation. I'm a double Leo too.
We've got all the fire signs.
Of course, you're an Aries. Are you a Sagittarius?
No, I'm a Sagittarius.
That's why I like you so much. Yes. Oh my God, we're like in order of fire too.
We're like fire forming. Signs. Like, I can see the energy.
Everyone's posture just changed.
So my sun is in Leo, and so is my rising. So what you see is just what you get. And point being, Haley was like, what's something in the space of the salon that we can implement that will make you feel safe? And we all got to go around the room and share something. And I said, permission to fuck up.
Yeah.
Because we're all gonna. And honestly, I don't think anyone did, which is kind of funny. Like, there were very few aggressive things said that, I mean, even microaggressions, like everyone was just, it was a fucking awesome group of people. Like yeah. everyone worked so hard, but it wasn't like you're walking on eggshells trying to make sure everything you say yeah. is unoffensive. It was like speaking from everyone's experience allowed the truth to be heard in a way that was personal. And if you disagreed, there was room for that. Anyhow.
I feel like if we're really going on the metaphor game today, but yeah. like if we are not walking on eggshells, what we are is like a very supportive coal walk.
Yeah.
And you can either stand on the outside and watch and chant, or you can like go in there and like
run. And us fire signs.
It hurts like hell, but it feels fucking great.
It does. It does. So yeah, it's been a lot of unlearning, like what works and what doesn't work for me. And I'm a personal trainer, and a lot of the work that I do is health at every size informed. Mm-hmm. So weight neutrality, cultivating a positive body image, learning from fat women what the difference is between body positivity and positive body image, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of corroboration of that movement that was meant to center fat people that all of a sudden is in skinny white girl hashtags, which is inappropriate and violent.
Yeah. Like,
and a lot of people maybe listening aren't ready to hear that, which is why it needs to be said, because I needed to hear it too. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't ready to. And then the more that I learned about my place, not only politically, but like where my voice not belongs, but where it is going to have the most vibration and effect, like where the legs of my voice become the longest, was where I found I needed to speak. And then the other places where I needed to curl up and listen were in a lot of the movements that were talking about bodies. So,
yes.
There's okay, that. So your toolbox, it sounds like, has gone through so many revamps, right? Like
yeah.
beginning at this kind of like first touch point moment where you started to be whether fully conscious or subconsciously conscious of your identity as what was being perceived as a cis man, but like kind of having to grapple with other people's perception of your femininity.
Can I add on to that?
Please.
You've sparked something in me.
Ooh.
So I... this is no secret if you like have ever seen something I post on an Instagram, but like I have had a Grindr for a long time, which is like the queer dating app that's usually male identified people, and I get a lot of interest because I have a six pack and not a lot of interest because I have a cool brain, and like my literal bio says into comments on my brain over comments on my body, you know, like into empathy and consent, not into the transphobic pronoun joke you have in your bio. Like,
do you think that is enough to self-select the group of people that you want at a certain like
absolutely
caliber?
Not that's just like the basic weeding out I can do, but like people don't read that stuff. They just like see someone and they're like, ah, that looks similar to the muscles I see on everywhere, like in the gay culture media, that is like beefy men in jock straps posing against windows by like photographers, you know. And I used to be one of those because I thought that was like my body reclamation phase, and then I realized that was all rooted in self-serving validation. It was not. Like, I got validation because like I looked nice in my underwear. Like, what about like what I write? What about what I have to say? What about how good I am to other people? What about how I'm evolving and learning? Like, on my tombstone, I hope it doesn't say had a fucking six pack. I hope it says like made people enjoy, like allowed people space to enjoy life at the fullest, and allowed artistic opportunities for us to reckon with the world we're in. And like, does it matter what I look like if I want to achieve that? It shouldn't. And unfortunately it does, but it shouldn't.
I want my tombstone to say both.
I want to go back to this like whole Instagram ideal that you're bringing up, and like this whole like insta-gay movement.
The insta-gays. Someone asked me on a date if I was an insta-gay, and I just wanted to throw myself off something tall.
Oh, you stand up and like, you walk away.
I dated him for 6 months. So like that lets you know where I was in my life then. But he was wonderful.
Dated the wrong
he
person.
Wanted to make sure I wasn't an insta-gay.
Sure,
he was
sure,
not
sure.
interested in it.
But so in this insta-gay world.
Mm-hmm.
This little Barbie insta-gay world. What is it? You curate a very different Instagram for yourself.
Thank you so much.
You have a dialogue with, and I don't think it's, I wouldn't want to say like you have a dialogue with your fans. I think that you have a dialogue with yourself.
I do.
And you've allowed people, you've consented that people can participate in it if it helps them too.
I have. I get a lot of flack for it. Like, to be completely honest, like, I think it looks like my DMs are just full of, like, I love Monday motivation, which today is Monday. And, like, I got a lot of DMs about, like, I love today's Monday motivation, which is why I'm out there. Like, you know, if I have this joy for life inside of me, what good is it doing stuck in my chest? Mm. Like, that should be shared. And then also, like, if I'm noticing the mistreatment of other people in our community, that is also my responsibility to share. Like, I will be the first to admit that I have used photos intentionally that will be clickbait to say things that are important to be said. Uh-huh. And uh-huh. right now, I'm not ashamed of that. In a couple of years, I might look back on that and go, there was some deep-seated validation you were still seeking from that. Like, you liked that that picture got X amount of likes, even though it had a good social mission.
Yeah.
I don't know where... I haven't
I'll
reckoned
say there's
with it
nothing
enough.
Wrong with it.
Thank you.
I personally am like... It's the intention. The work is still good, right? Mm-hmm. The intention is there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It matters why you're building and why you're speaking. And I think that how you get people to listen, we're all screaming like into a vacuum, right? Like I don't see anything wrong with adding photos of yourself. I mean, and also when you think about Instagram's algorithms, you're actually making sure that your photo is getting to the top
of an
algorithm.
Yeah, that's what I think about.
Yeah, your photo has one mission in that post. Mm-hmm. Your text has a different mission in that post.
Totally, totally. That's the fine line that I'm walking. And I mean, every time I post a picture of myself, like in my underwear, even if I just like want to, I lose tons of followers. Like people, like that is not the way that everyone's like, oh, you just do that to get attention. Not everyone. There have been like four people in my life that have critiqued me of that, and like they were all wrong, you know. But I get a lot of pushback from the instigates that follow me because they think I'm going to be another, like, you know, eye candy on their grid. And then I'm asking us to look at why we're doing this. And as queer people, is this body reclamation going to hurt other people in the process of our attempted healing? Mm. Or are we making room for healing for everyone? And there is no black and white answer to that. But that reckoning makes people really uncomfortable. And, like, that's my job. Like, if I have discovered something that is useful to be talked about, I think it's my responsibility to use my platform and share it. Mm-hmm. So, I thank you for pointing that out because I do walk this fine line and I'm proud of that and it's constantly developing. Mm. And I put in my, I did my 2020, like, who are we unfollowing this year? And I put the instigays. And, like, mm-hmm. I said, because everyone deserves a seat at the table, but if the only seats at the table are reserved for the Fire Island gays that all look the same, that's not a table. That's an exclusive club.
That's like the VIP table at the club.
That's the VIP table, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Mm.
And I don't even know if, like, the opposite of that, like, judging everyone on their brains is the way to do it, but, like, there has to be a better dialogue than what's currently going on, and we have to like people for more than like what their ass looks like.
Yeah. What do you think about the likes going away?
I am thrilled. I cannot wait.
They've already gone away on one of my accounts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my Finsta. Gosh. On your Finsta?
My Finsta just says like Philip liked it and others.
And
whoa,
others.
It's kind of like a slow rolling thing. Like, yeah. I still have the likes.
I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to bring about a lot of mental peace for some people.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be difficult for people who want to partner with influencers. I don't consider myself an influencer. Just because that's not what I want to be looked at as. I hope people walk away from my social media feeling better than when they got there or feeling like they have purpose and something to grab onto, to grapple with. And if that's what an influencer is to you, then cool. But like, I don't want to sit around doing brands partnerships and things like that. That's not my mission.
Yeah. Well, your touch point is art, is theater, right? And creation.
Creation,
and
creativity.
And it makes me feel... I feel like your Instagram is a reflection of that.
Thank you.
And not a reflection of, like, the need to be validated or the need to become Instagram famous. And I had this amazing professor in college talk about art, and he said that like making social justice art or making art that like actually speaks to people is to embody and indict. Embody and indict, and the idea that you can't just indict, and if obviously if you're holding a mirror right up to yourself, up to an audience, up to a world or a community, you're also acknowledging your embodiment of that community in some aspects, whether it be their perception of you or your own needs to be part of that community. And I feel like you walk that line by embodying and indicting in a way.
Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody.
So it's still us.
And we're still Tango. A new sex company for everybody.
And everybody.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners for the support that we've gotten so far. We are so excited to be releasing new episodes bi-weekly for your pleasure.
And to show our love to you, we've made a promo code just for you. Check out the Tango plug, or tote, or both.
Use code THANKYOUFORCOMING to get 15% off of your first Tango purchase at
www.tangowith.us. Thank you for coming. So, with like curating profiles and delete and canceling the Instagays, and
I don't want to cancel. I just want to call them in, and if we're not ready for that, then like, then you need to remove them, and that's okay. I actually talked about how cancel culture is what we're canceling this year.
Please.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. And then also,
we get nowhere without a tough conversation.
What you were saying is actually exactly what I was going to ask you.
Which is, okay, so.
Filtering. How do you then filter through all of these medias? Because there's so many different medias of meeting people these days. You know, there's Instagram, and like, I definitely have friends that like I've met through Instagram, and then they become
Met through Instagram.
Right. Like,
oh my gosh,
we meet friends, we date, we work through Instagram.
I met you all through Instagram, sort of.
I met Haley through Instagram.
I met Haley through, we work together. We laugh and like, I met you through in person.
So we meet each other in all of these different ways. And then that also translates into like, we curate our Instagram persona, which is different than our Grindr persona, which is different than our Tinder persona, which is different than our Hinge persona, which is different than our Lex persona. And like, we have all these different personas. And how do you filter it?
Who is she?
I try to be as authentic as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, when things are not going well, I put that on the internet too. Mm-hmm. Because I want people to see the accessibility in that, and if we're constantly looking at everyone thriving, we're not looking at the reality, and I think that that is like a, I think that's just throwing a bunch of water on the like flame we have of keeping our mental health intact, right? And I don't want to be a bucket of water, I want to be a spark.
So do you need to then have
the metaphor spot. Wow.
So then do you need to like have extensive conversation over an app before ever meeting somebody?
Depends on my mood. For Instagram specifically, I don't get a lot of solicitation on Instagram anymore. When I was posting pictures that were like me scantily clad just because I wanted the attention for it, I was getting that attention. It was unfulfilling.
Yeah.
And I have since shifted. I also like, I mean, just in curating like what I need for myself, anybody who posts about their diet, you get unfollowed. Like that is harmful and toxic and inherently unfeminist, and there are so many roots of racism and classism and ableism that are being left out of the diet discourse that if I can't have that in my life when I'm going on social media. So I let that go, and that goes for the guys I look up on Grindr, and like when their Instagram is linked and they're talking about being on the ketogenic diet, like I'm not gonna be inside you or vice versa. I will not feel safe. So it depends on what I'm looking for. Like there are times where it's like, I need to fuck. Like, I need that. Like, that is what I crave. And I have less of a vetting process. I usually know, like, what I'm looking for. And I am to a place in my sexual development that I am proud of, where I have multiple friends that I trust and can explore things sexually with. And it's not like they're not like on call, but like, if I want to try something new, I know the five or six people I'm going to text that like I want to try something with. Or like, if I want a sexual experience that I've tied to a certain person, I want to be able to go back to them. I am not a like, pun intended, come and go kind of guy. Funny guy, gender. And
we're figuring it out.
And that's not my style, mostly because when I'm seeking a connection that way, it's not usually just like a fucking go. It's usually that I'm seeking a connection.
Yeah.
And I would argue that if everybody really delved deep in themselves, we are not just looking to insert or be inserted into or any of the foreplay that might lead up to that, right?
Yeah.
We're not looking for the vast array of sexual acts or things that can fall under the guise of being sexy. And that can be anything from like dirty talk to like sending flirty messages to like having a butt plug put inside you by someone that you trust. Like,
ooh, Tango butt plug can be purchased now. Tango with dot us.
I have one. I haven't used it yet, but I should. I'm nervous.
You should, and then report back.
I will. I will. I'll Instagram live it. And
I would pay for that.
I would get.
You want to rate?
You want to
rate and subscribe?
It's so funny. I had a couple of friends who were like, "Why don't you do an OnlyFans?" And I'm like, "Because that's not the brand that I want. And also, like, I would just charge a lot more than $10 a month. And, like, no shade to anyone who's doing that, but, like...
No, yeah. I mean, you can set your rate pretty high on OnlyFans.
I could, but that's not... I don't think that's the path that I want to go down. The sex work that I've done is different.
Could you do OnlyFans and just do, like, and just talk?
I mean, sure. No, there's no requirement on OnlyFans.
I could. I think I would rather build my platform as, like, a film and television actor that is also someone accessible for young people to look up to as a queer resource that talks openly about sex and politics and diet culture and queerness and identities and have an open toolbox that can be pulled from. Because I didn't have that, and I would rather be that for other people because the struggles that I have had to go through to get to where I am now, I don't think should be inherently part of people's identity as queer people.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, in the queer community, like, we have a lot...
Why is it based in trauma? Like, why is it not based in celebration?
Yeah, we all connect a lot of queer people trauma bond.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we don't need to. I mean, like, we don't need to live in a world where, like, being queer is synonymous with we have trauma.
Right, yeah. Right.
And like you said earlier, like, our learning starts so early, like, from the playground, from before puberty has ever started, because what it starts with is language, and we learn our language when we're before elementary school and elementary school. We're hearing words.
Before we have context.
Yeah,
before we have personal experiences to attach to them.
Totally. And a lot of the language that I use on Back to Grindr is, like, it's gentle, and because I think softness and vulnerability, the pairing of those two is one of my strengths as a person that I used to shut down. I mean, if any of you, I don't know if anyone who's listening to this would have known me in high school, but, like, if you had, I was, like, perfectionist 4.0 articles written about how many AP classes I took. Like, I will shield myself from everything bad by being perfect.
Yeah.
No walls. You've never seen me cry. That is no way to live a fulfilling life. Yeah. And I, like, the reverse of that is I, like, cry every day now, and it is wonderful. It's liberating and it feels real. And so I seek that kind of connection, not crying with other people on Grindr, but I seek a connection that's real. Like, I don't just want it to be about the physical. I want to get to know you. Like, if our energies are going to be in the same space, there's power in that.
Yeah.
And what you want to say about what that does to your wisdom on a cellular level is, I don't think, my place to speak on. But I do know that, like, those experiences live with us, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally. Like, I don't always remember everything that happened or necessarily everyone's name that I've ever hooked up with, but I remember a lot of how each one of those made me feel and what I learned from each one of those people. Like, everyone's got a story, and I am fascinated by listening to people's stories. And especially when I was younger and developing as a queer person, like, I bonded with people who were older than I was because their queer renaissance and their celebration of coming out was happening in their mid-30s because they grew up in a different world than I did. And in my late teens, early 20s, we were at the same level of emotional development and the same level of, like, hedonistic intellectual people, right? Yeah. I dated a lot of doctors. And because of that, I formed a vetting system that was based off of my comfort level with people of, like, am I going to want to lay and cuddle with you after and talk about, like, what's really going on in your heart right now? Or is this going to be someone who isn't available for me? And I'm not going to say that my way is right, because I don't think that it universally is, but it's certainly right for me. And I want to have a connection with somebody. So I'm constantly working on what that vetting system looks like, but I truly think that deep down, everyone is seeking a similar connection. Like, I saw this comic strip, and I wish I remembered the artist so I could shout them out, but they posted, like, a picture of two guys, like, getting out of bed, like, putting their underwear on, and, like, the speech bubble of what was said out loud was, like, thanks, like, you know, like, I'll DM you my number, like, let's do this again, or, like, let's hang out. And the speech bubble above that was the thought bubble, rather, was, like, what if this is the real guy? Like, you know, should I ask him to stay? Like, and the speech bubble of the other guy was, like, yeah, I would love that. Let's hang out again. And the thought bubble was, I really wish you'd ask me to stay longer. Like, I feel a connection, you know? And you're just watching these people part ways. And it's like, how many times have we missed an opportunity? This doesn't have to be someone you're going to marry and, like, you know, live in harmony with for the rest of your life, which is not synonymous with marriage. But that's... It doesn't have to be a life partner, but you can learn something.
Something that you are getting at is, like, our generation in dating through the internet's fear of intimacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really accepting intimacy when it doesn't mean relationship and it doesn't mean love.
And
or it doesn't mean forever.
Totally.
And it doesn't mean like partner.
And I've run into that problem because, as you can probably tell, I'm one of the people who enjoys intimacy and enjoys getting close to people. And like, I want to learn like what's on your heart, you know, mm-hmm. like as silly as that. I don't think it sounds silly, but like on paper it does. But when mm-hmm. I say it out loud, it's like, that's what I want. I want mm-hmm. that genuine connection. And it gets me in trouble sometimes because then I get the like, I think I'm in love with you, mm. you know, after one date
yeah.
or after one hookup.
Yes, I usually blame that on my improv experience. But I'm curious how you negotiate this with being in an open relationship, right?
Yeah. So,
and the meeting people, I think when most people think of open relationships, there's so many different versions, but I think the most common one that we know of is like, you can fuck other people.
Yeah.
But how do we negotiate, oh no, you can like develop bonds with other people, or like totally. You can develop intimacy with them.
I won't specify like which partner this was because I've been in two different open relationships, and like just to protect their privacy, we'll just like count them as open relationships in general in my experience yeah. with mm-hmm. that. I am currently in an open relationship with a man that I am just falling in love with.
Ugh.
And oh, it's so special. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that journey in a minute because I think mm-hmm. that's like the real meat. As opposed to the potatoes. And I say this as a vegetarian. Like, I've never had meat before in my life. Anyway, does dick count? I've had a lot of meat.
Haven't we all?
Haven't we all? So, what was the question? Oh, open relationships, navigating intimacy. The first guy that I ever had penetrative sex with, I consider that my sexual debut. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to virginity loss, because I think that's a fucked up patriarchal concept that has no meaning other than oppression.
Yeah.
And I like sexual debut because it like implies that there's learning and growth and like maybe mm-hmm. a musical number. Like, you know. So the first guy that I did that with was in an open relationship with another guy named James, who I called Other James. And,
of course.
And I looked at him once at dinner and I was like, you're only in a relationship with this man because you are afraid of being alone and you're not in love with him.
Hmm.
I happened to be right. And he needed to hear that said because they ended things and he was so much happier many years after, right?
Yeah.
So that was my impression of what they were. And I was like, oh, people are just in this because it's a security blanket and they're afraid of being alone. And then I read The Ethical Slut by Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy. Dossie Easton is one of the writers. The Ethical Slut, a fascinating, interesting, always coming back to and grappling with kind of guidebook for what the basics of open relationships might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that it was based off mutual trust.
Yeah.
And that can go in any direction that you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned in my monogamous relationships was that in those, my partner and I were more committed to monogamy than we were to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because had we been committed to each other, we would have learned, and we did learn, that I am someone who is not able to be sexually monogamous. And I never cheated on my partners, but it was the desire to that drove me
yes.
to have the conversations.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that people who've cheated are wrong or bad, because that's not my place, but that's just not my experience.
Cheating falls into the umbrella of cancel culture.
Yeah.
I mean, we're calling yeah. people cheaters.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The act of, well,
we're not excusing, but we need better language.
We need better language because, so like, I think that cheating is like a hard term because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we want to say like, you're supposed to be monogamous. You're not supposed to cheat.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
If you do cheat, this is what happens if you cheat.
Well, monogamy is learned and it's not biologically
yeah.
built into all of us as people, maybe some more than others. I am in the category of people as a 20-something that it is not built for.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am, in my experience thus far, romantically monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I cannot imagine being with anybody else but the man that I'm with right now because, like, you know when you look at someone and you can just see the next 40 years and it doesn't scare you? That's where I am. And I have never been able to have that picture that wasn't a real picture. It was always either a fantasy or it was a blank canvas.
Right.
And now I'm somewhere in the middle where I'm like throwing paint at the wall and waiting for it to dry.
Ooh.
And seeing what kind of colors. And thus far, the color palette is just to my tastes. The metaphors, I am on it.
I
like
know.
Take notes, everyone.
This is visual.
So,
I hope that we have
visual.
Like, let's illustrate
yeah,
this.
Yeah, my open
podcast.
Relationship is splatter painting and it's a lot of trial and error. And one of the ones I was in was open because we were long distance for a long time, and I'm an actor who goes on contract. Both the open relationships I've been in were with actors that also go on contracts, and I want to continue exploring intimacy with other people, not romantically. I navigate those with some pretty clear boundaries. When I'm on Grindr, it says that I'm in an open relationship, and it says that when I am potentially going to have a connection with someone, I let them know I'm in an open relationship. I'm only looking for something that's going to be friendship, or it's going to be something that is more than friendship in terms of like adding sexual activity to it, but it's not a romantic thing. Like, I'm not looking to date you romantically, even though we might hang out and be friends. And I have met some of like what I call my sex friends that way. And like, there are people that are friends of mine that I could literally pick up the phone at midnight and call, and they would be there for me. And it's not romantic, but like, we might have been inside each other. You know what I mean?
So, I want you to define a term for us. Yeah. So,
oh God.
I had one too. Can we do both?
Yeah, let's mine is actually a sub-definition, so maybe we start with yours.
No, we start with yours.
Okay, so I want you to... We've talked about the definition of intimacy on another podcast, and these are all just definitions for you, how you would describe this term. Mm. And just keep in mind everything that you were just saying. Give me the difference between intimacy and romance. Mm.
I don't know if I have words for the difference, but I...
Feelings.
The feeling is that there is a bond romantically where you have a magnet inside your chest and they have a magnet inside their chest, and whatever you do, they're always going to point towards each other. And when you are intimate with someone, you are sharing the same space, but your magnets don't align. They just might complement each other, or they might feel good to lay next to each other. Mm. Or you can have the magnets that are turned the other way around and you go, fuck this, this is not my thing. And you can feel it, right? But like with my partner, the magnet in my chest is always drawn to him. And when I think about who I want to maybe marry one day, or maybe move in with one day, or maybe like get a dog with one day, or like spend time tonight with because I miss him. Like, true story. That's him. It's not somebody else. But I can be intimate with someone and like learn and share and cuddle and kiss and like suck your dick, and it doesn't make the magnet in my chest point to you. It's the best I've got.
I feel that
That's
way.
A great visual.
I love that.
Thank you. I'm a little bit impressed with myself. I thought that was pretty solid. So,
well, because I think it's like you want to be able to have this intimate connection with a secondary partner.
And it's inexplicable. Like the first time that I guess I categorize it this way. It's like a process of elimination almost. The sex that I've had with my current partner, I did not know it could be that good. I did not understand that, like, the romantic and the physical could align in a way where it's, like, you feel like you have created something that doesn't feel real. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the fireworks, they explode, and, like, you feel like you're having an out-of-body experience, but you've never felt more you at the same time. Yeah. And I had never felt that until him.
Yeah.
And with other people, it's, like, this feels good. Cool. But like, I was dancing on the street, like literally like singing in the rain moment. Yeah. Like I get it, you know? Yeah. And that doesn't happen with intimacy. That happens with romance for me.
Yeah.
I'm curious about dating and open relationships when you haven't gotten to that point yet with your primary partner, right? Like when you are someone practicing ethical monogamy, practicing non-monogamous relationships, and you're meeting someone new, right? You're meeting someone that you want to be your romantic partner. You want them to be your number one, your primary, but you're not yet in love with them. You're still getting to know them. And there's still other candidates.
Yeah. Oh, and there's still other candidates.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say other candidates, but like how do you...
The option is there.
The option is there when you're not... You don't have a dog, right? You don't have an engagement ring. You're just, you know, they're the person you want to tell that thing to or ask to go to the theater with. Like they're the...
But you're not there yet.
But you're not at that, because I think that that's the interesting struggle is like a lot of successful open relationships that I've seen have become open after like love and understanding of what monogamy could look like is established.
For me, it's been mutual trust. It's the I don't know how helpful this is, but in my guts, I know that my magnet is always going to point to him. And mm-hmm. like, no matter how many other magnets I come encounter with, they are never going to feel the same attractive energy. It's just not going to happen. And if it does, then that's something to grapple with. But like, when I feel something in my gut, I'm rarely wrong. And I have mm-hmm. a pretty strong intuition that I neglected for a long time. And in getting back into it, it just comes back even stronger. Mm-hmm. Fun success story.
I think that's something about open relationships is that they are an ever-changing cycle. It's not monogamy in its like definition is like deciding to like do one thing forever.
Yeah.
And open relationships is sort of the letting go of that, and that mm-hmm. like we are not just doing one thing, mm-hmm. which does not define anything. Mm-hmm. So it's always changing. And I mean, like, I'm literally like in a week or so about to celebrate my 5-year anniversary. And I had
congratulations.
Thanks. Hey, Ryan.
Longevity is not a marker of success, and I still want to celebrate the longevity being part of your success.
Oh, thank you. No. I love hitting a benchmark like this because it truly hasn't felt like a long time at all. It's just felt like life. And mm-hmm. we practiced 6 months of monogamy before we ever explored openness. Mm. And it has like changed many, many times over the course of our relationship.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have never been in a relationship that's lasted this long. Because
that's a long time. It's a long time. Yeah. That's like 12 years in gay years.
I know, seriously. And that's actually what I tell people, that it is, in gay years, a lifetime.
Truly, though, look at the way that we are forced to emotionally develop in a society that demonizes our love.
Yeah, and privileges open sexuality and exploration while society is saying monogamy is the correct thing to do.
Newer.
So,
yeah.
And I think that that also just comes with the fact that definers of like what romantic, back to your like what I threw on you of like romance mm-hmm. and that magnet and the one that is pointing in a direction, if it's like our true, if we have a compass and we have a true north and we can point in many different directions to like mm-hmm. find that way, but like if we have a true north and that's like that primary partner, that person, I got so distracted in that metaphor that I forgot where I was going.
It's funny because a compass is a magnet.
A compass is a magnet because
which I really love.
It's pointing to true north. But so I love that. While we're exploring, like, we get lost and it's hard mm-hmm. and you need to figure it out. And that takes like radical communication.
Yeah, the communication is key. And then I think it's also commitment to the person and not the label. Like, for me, I know that if I'm committing to my partner, if he came to me and said, I need to be in a monogamous relationship, that's what's going to make me feel secure, I would say, okay, let's talk about how we can do this and support what we both need. Like, mm-hmm. It's not that you compromise your needs for that person. It's that you, it's like you, over, when you're driving down the road, you can't just put the gas pedal on and expect the car to drive straight. You have to overcorrect here and there, mm-hmm. which does mean compromise. Like, even if you're just trying to go straight, you do have to steer a little further to the right and a little further to the left. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, the ebb and flow. Like, that's the infinity symbol. That is not a new concept. It's found everywhere in nature, right? And I think that it is human nature, too. Ebb and flow. So I think it's radical communication, and I think that it is commitment to the person's needs instead of the labels. And I think it's willingness to do the ebb and flow and sentence. I think that's what I know right now.
Yeah. That was a good definition, though, between those two things.
What was your word?
What was your word? Yeah.
I honestly forgot it. I was so blown away. Oh, wait, I do remember my word.
Yeah.
It's a dual word again.
Cool.
It's a two-word, one-word?
It's a two-word, one-word.
Okay, what's
the word?
Well,
wait, maybe it's a hyphened word.
Oh.
It's a one-word.
So it's a one-word.
Toolbox.
Oh, that's one word.
I think
it's
one word.
Is one word. Legitimately one word.
Is that a
legitimately.
Hyphen word?
No, I don't think it's a hyphen word.
I can't spell.
That is in my that's in my lexicon.
Turns out I can't spell. Great.
What does toolbox
what
mean
is
to
toolbox?
Me? It's the set of skills you pull from to regulate yourself and to get yourself to a neutral place to where you can thrive on top of that.
Regulate is interesting.
Yeah, I use my toolbox to I use it for both. I edit my definition. I use my toolbox, which is like my set of things that help me feel like the most me. And that is a mix of the foods I eat, the things I do with my body, the people I talk to, the media I consume, the the makeout sessions with my lover, you know what I mean? Mm. The open relation, like all of those different things that I need to feel like me. And when I have them, not necessarily in order, but when I have, oh, now I'm getting meta about it because I feel like it is the tools that I use to get myself to be available for each one of those Ooh. Things.
Yeah.
Mm. So I wonder if it's a skill set that you use to just navigate everyday life and regulate yourself to a point where you can then handle anything that comes across your path and then also get yourself to a place where you can thrive and like ride the waves on top. I think when maybe this will make sense. When I use my toolbox, I'm no longer riding the waves, I'm steering the ship. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I need to use tools from it. Self-care, journaling, meditation, yoga, calling my mom, calling my best friend, crying, listening to sad music, getting on the train, getting really angry and monologuing into my phone about it, like allowing myself to permission to feel whatever I feel, examples mm-hmm. concluded. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I need all of those things just to help me feel like I can even ride the boat. Mm-hmm. And then I might use another one to help me steer the ship.
So how do you negotiate driving and being in the driver's seat and also being present?
Softness. Mm. I think it's so much of what I am learning is that the key to my happiness is rooted in forgiveness of all the times I robbed myself of that because I thought I was doing the right thing. And because I didn't yet know enough about myself and because I was naive or I was hurt or I was damaged or I was healing or I was unaware, I was ignorant or I was willfully ignorant. So much of my acceptance of where my ship is going is rooted in forgiveness. I would say that's over the past year. And over the past year was when I experienced some of the worst things I've ever experienced and some of the best. Mm. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
No. Okay, so you brought up, we're talking about toolbox, we're talking about your last year. I'm going to call you in.
Call me in.
And I would like you to talk about 100 dates with myself, or what's your title?
Oh,
of it?
Yeah, 100 happy dates.
100 so happy dates.
There was an Instagram challenge called 100 happy days, like years and years ago when Instagram started, like the humble groundlings of Instagram, where you would post, I think the idea was you posted for 100 days something that made you happy. I went through 3 breakups in like 13 months. Like one ended right before one summer, 6 months later, another one ended, and then another 7 months later, another one ended, which when I looked at it on paper was a cry for help. And when I was doing it in person, it was like, I'm on the boat. Like, you know, like I'm on the boat.
But I'm seasick.
But I am seasick.
And why am I still riding a dinghy?
Yeah, I was in a dinghy and I deserved a yacht with grand sails and also like, donations to my favorite charity. You know what I mean? Because, like, I would feel guilty about being on the goddamn yacht. So, and I have been on them, and I just feel sick with, like, oh my god, your necklace is my paycheck, man. I'm like, do you want, like, Susan, like, do you under... Oh.
I love that boating is a verb.
Yeah.
I think it is.
To boat.
It is.
To boat, yeah.
To boat.
Yeah.
I boat.
So...
I boat, you boat, they boat.
We all boat.
We boat.
I found myself at the end of that last relationship going, for the last 3.5 years, I cannot remember a time I was actually single, and I feel out of touch with myself. Mm. And my friend Allie Mason, who everyone should follow on Instagram, Allie.Mason, she was my roommate at the time, and she runs a socially conscious social media company called Something Greater Social Media, which I learned a lot from, because a lot of my authenticity tips of, like, how to be authentic, but also, like, use the algorithm, come from her because I think she's brilliant. And having lived with her, I know that she leads with her heart. She runs something called The Get Down, which is a sober social dance party that's based in New York City.
The Get Down.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We should all go to The Get Down. So she the co-producer, co-founder, co-owner? One of those. It's in her Instagram bio. She was doing this and she was like, I think you should come to this. You would love to dance. It's like one of the only places where the culture is consent is mandatory, verbal and enthusiastic. No drinks on the dance floor. You can drink before, but like you don't get drinks spilled on you necessarily. It's live music. The DJ's Tasha Blank. She was a Juilliard dancer who fell out of love with dance and needed a way to reclaim dance. And so there's always live performances. And she's like, I think you'd like the people. And I was like, fine, I'll go. And I, like, it was under the sea theme, and so I wore, like, my fishnet mesh suit with, like, tiny shorts and a crop top that said, love yourself now, because that's what I was trying to do. And I went and I danced on top of this bar that wasn't being used for probably 4 hours. And like, it was that moment where you don't even realize you're crying, but you're so happy. Mm. And like, there was a live drummer that day, and there was a circus performer who had left Cirque du Soleil because she felt like she didn't have enough creative freedom and did this entire act on silks that like blew me away. Wow. And so many people came up and they were like, I love your vibe. Can we dance together? And I would just dance with people. And I was looked at for my energy and for my aura, not for my six pack, and not because they wanted something from me, because they wanted to share in that energy and bounce it off. And that is also intimacy. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was missing. And so I went, I need more of this, because I walked all the way home, like floating on a cloud. I was just giddy. And I was like, Allie, this is it. I was like, I feel like I just went on a date with myself. Uh-huh. And I was like, got it. Before I enter another relationship, I'm going to take myself on, I needed a fun number, 100. And so I was like, I'm going to take myself on 100 dates. And it started as a reclamation of doing things that are normally couples things, like going to the theater and going to dinner and doing picnics and like that kind of thing. I needed to reclaim those as something I could do by myself so I could get to know me and what mm-hmm. part of me was so hurting that I needed to be in a relationship with another man to feel validated. What part of me had been so overlooked that I had picked the wrong men to be with, you know? So
where, started. What day are you on? Or has this ended?
It has not ended. It's still going on. That's where it gets interesting, because I started that last April. That was my first one, was the get down in late April, and I'm still not done. And I knew it was going to take me a long time because I needed it to be long enough to become a habit. And it morphed from like taking myself to the theater and being okay with like going by myself again to like going to the restaurants I went with my ex and ordering the pizza alone and like journaling about it to making time for myself to practice the piano, to carving out time to eat food that I knew would fuel me and also give me joy, to allowing myself to hook up with guys that I think would be fun, to I'm going to ask him out because he's special and my magnet's pointing to him. And that is a date with myself and also with him. And so I'm in the 80s now. I'm close. And I haven't put them all online because it's become such a thing where like, what am I, like 7 to 8 months later, something like that, where it's become so force of habit that I do it without knowing. Like my dance class that I'm going to tonight is a date with myself because I love this class and it makes me feel confident. And the instructor, the dance teacher, sees something in me where she yells at me, and I know it's because it's her heart is trying to tell mine that it's worthy. And I get that somehow, and I've never gotten it from anyone else. And that makes me feel full as an artist. So I do that. And that's a date with myself just as much as like going to the movies to see Florence Pugh featuring the rest of the cast of Little Women. Yeah. You know what I mean? When she got an Oscar nom, I sobbed. I was so happy. I feel like we did it together, like me and Florence, but it was just her.
We were all there.
We were all there. So that's what 100 happy dates has been. And I journal each one of them, and I post that on the internet to be reckoned with, because I get so much response from this, from people who will like respond to number 78 and be like, I love this journey, this is my favorite one you've done yet, to people who will go back and like read number 18 and be like, wow, like this has inspired me to do something like this. And I didn't do it to inspire other people, but like that's an awesome offshoot. I did it to get in touch with myself. And now the phase is like, it went from reclamation to force of habit to branching out into reclaiming my artistry again, to dating myself simultaneously with dating someone else. And that feels so full circle, and it feels healthy.
I would even venture to say that all of those dates are like moments of exploring intimacy with yourself.
Totally. And learning what's in my toolbox. It is a part of my toolbox, but it's also been an excavation. It's like been a cleaning out of my toolbox closet, you know? So that's that project. And I'm really proud of it because I just made it up one day. And the other rule is I can't be on my phone. I have to be present with it. I can journal if I want to, but I can't be on my phone because then it's not a date. It's like watching Netflix and like scrolling through Instagram. That's not a date. That's like vegging out and chilling and like taking time for me, which is self-care. But like when one of my dates was watching Notes on a Scandal because I love Cate Blanchett. And I was like, I'm going to watch this and I'm going to absorb every part of it. That's a date.
Yeah.
For me, that's the guidelines that I need.
It's like the energy that you put towards it.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It's an investment in myself.
I think that's amazing. I think that like maybe not everybody has as much will as you do, but maybe everybody does have as much will as
I
you do.
I think everyone does.
To do 100.
We do.
But even like starting to incorporate that practice before you want to make sure that you're like hitting this a benchmark mm-hmm. and really getting comfortable with being with yourself intimately. Yeah.
Well, the benchmark too has served its purpose in a way, because the goal was that I wasn't going to date anyone till I was done with 100, which is kind of like saying, I don't know, I'm not going to have dessert till I finish my dinner. Like, enjoy them both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. once you have filled yourself with the nutrients you know you need to thrive today, like, enjoy the cheesecake. And the cheesecake also might be one of the nutrients you need to thrive. So, mm-hmm. like, put it all on the same plate.
It's bringing us back to forgiveness.
Forgiveness. And softness.
Yes. And yes. being able to set this challenge or this goal for yourself and then rewrite the rules within.
Yes.
You meet a boy.
Yes.
Okay, then the new rule is that yeah. I am allowed to date during this.
Uh-huh. And here's how.
And here's how. And I feel like that is the right way to set expectations, right? You set the expectation that you'll meet it until you can't.
Right.
And then you have a new expectation. And we talk so much about expectations yeah. and sex and yeah. how expectation is just like breeding a lot of like failure mm-hmm. and disappointment, like within sexual relationships. And yeah. this element of forgiveness is kind of the beginning of being able to be malleable with every new expectation, with every new benchmark, with every new milestone.
Absolutely. Because when you look at it objectively, like according to the rules I set back last April, I have failed. But mm-hmm. according to my heart, I have succeeded in a way that I didn't know I would. Mm-hmm. And I... Mm-hmm. That's not true. I knew that I would get to some version of this. I just didn't know what it would look like. I didn't know how it would manifest.
Right.
But I knew that I would be happy with being with me. And I really cherish my alone time. And I cherish my time with other people. And there's like a healing of codependency that I think we can all reckon with some version of that I was also going through. And now it's interesting because my next couple dates are going to be like bringing myself back to therapy. Because even though I would consider myself like the healthiest both mentally and physically that I've probably ever been, I'm now realizing I have space to go to therapy now.
Yeah.
I have other things to unearth, and that is because I'm healthy that I'm ready to reckon with them. And like why am wow. I not comfortable coming out to my parents about being non-binary? I don't know. I'm going to enlist some professional help and figure it out.
Well, you've know? Done a lot of work on your own to be able to get yeah. to the point where you can do work with others.
Totally.
Right? I like
get
to
dressed
think,
to go to the party.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I'm going to start using that. Because I always tell like my friends like, or lovers or like family, like in the middle of like arguments or like heated moments, like, is it actually an us problem or is it a you problem? And what steps can you take before you come to me? What work can you do alone to be able to negotiate any situation or any circumstance or feeling before you bring it to other people?
Totally.
And that's like going to that. Be, like, your most authentic, like, expression of that experience.
Yeah.
I'm curious what kind of, like, trial and error you've had in 100
dates.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the bad ones were, but there were some... I mean, they're not bad, but, like, a lot of them, I learned something. And I journaled that, and I chronicled, like, I learned this about myself, or I'm feeling one step closer to XYZ. Oh, I remember one where it was like, I felt the lowest, and I sat on the floor for, like, no apparent reason, and I just sobbed. Like, we're talking, like, Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice wreckage. And there was nothing that particularly triggered that. There was nothing going on, but my body needed to release something, and I don't know what it was getting rid of, but that was the outlet it chose, and I listened. And I let myself go outside, and I was working on a show out in the middle of Connecticut where I had like these beautiful fields and like just openness that we don't have in New York. And I went to the middle of the parking lot so I could just wail, you know, mm-hmm. and I did. And that wasn't fun. I was emotionally exhausted.
Yes.
I was drained. There were no cameras, so I couldn't win an Oscar for it. You know what I mean? Like it
was like
a parking lot cry. Like, yeah. come on. Like, could Anna Hathaway have done that in Les Mis? I don't know. The point was like, it felt like shit. I had to eat so much mac and cheese to like comfort myself, right? Which I love mac and cheese. So that was a good thing that came out of it. But like, there I am up at 3 a.m. with rehearsal the next day, and I'm emotionally drained, and my face is puffy, and I feel awful, but I also feel like I honored my body, you know? So it's like that kind of trial and error is like, this worked, this didn't.
Yeah, and the things that didn't work, there's sometimes a lot of catharsis.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
for coming, James.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for making space for me to share all of these things. I really appreciate it.
Of course.